have police photographing our license plates.
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to The Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing the creative artist and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is Sue Friedman, who is the CEO and president of the Alzheimer's Association in Central and Western Virginia. Good morning, Sue. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning to you.
Now, Sue, we've talked quite a bit on other radio shows and interviews, and one of the biggest motivators behind that is, as you've told us before, 5 million people have Alzheimer's even as we speak, and it's expected to triple soon.
It is, and actually, as we speak, every 67 seconds, nearly every minute, a new American hears the diagnosis.
Wow. You know, I know denial is a powerful thing because my parents, as most know, suffered from Alzheimer's, but trying to explain that even to their relatives, my relatives, was always a challenge because a lot of people don't even want to talk about it. And then when they do, they become these sort of overly sad and hands-on and instead of... Well, I'll tell you what I used to say, and then you correct me if necessary. I used to say to the caregivers and family, you have to love the person who's in front of you. You can't pretend they're someone else or, you know, are not there. They are the person in front of you, and that's the person you have to love and communicate with. Is that oversimplifying? Does that make sense?
No, and it's exactly what we say. You have to be where the person is.
Yes.
So if the person today is back when they're a child, then that's where you need to be as well. So the present, 2015, and the month and the day, and the city really don't matter. It matters where that person's cognitive abilities have them. And so you're right. You have to be where the person is.
So how does one do that?
Well, listening is a really good start. So if I'm listening to my grandmother and she is talking about, you know, when she was first married and her husband was a young man and they were starting a household, then I have to have a conversation and about that as opposed to what did you have for lunch today? Or anything else. So you want to be where the person is and where they are in particular in terms of feelings and emotions. And so I might say to my mother, or my grandmother in this case, well, you must have been very happy and maybe a little excited and nervous about being a newlywed. And so you get the person the freedom to deal with those feelings and address those feelings, hopefully happy feelings, as opposed to, again, asking factual things. Well, what day were you married? Let's not ask that.
Yeah.
Let's deal around the feelings and the emotions and the sense of the event instead of the facts and figures around the event.
Excellent. Can you tell us, often I hear that people use the word dementia and Alzheimer's sort of interchangeably. Is that correct, or is there a difference, or does it matter?
Well, there is a difference, but it's correct. How's that? The way that we like to look at it, we can use the sports analogy, or we can use the umbrella analogy. The sports analogy is, think of dementia as the world of sports. And think of Alzheimer's as maybe professional football, if we would agree that professional football is kind of the king of sports in this country.
Okay.
Because Alzheimer's is about 70% of all forms of dementia. So we are a form of dementia, Alzheimer's is.
Yes.
But it is the most prevalent form of dementia. If we think about the umbrella analogy, we can say, think of dementia as the big umbrella, and under the umbrella you have various forms, such as Alzheimer's or Lewy bodies or PICCs or vascular or frontal temporal lobe or Parkinson's with dementia.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many forms of dementia, but Alzheimer's is by far the majority of the dementia issues.
And did you say earlier every 67 seconds someone gets diagnosed with Alzheimer's?
I did.
Wow. And is that worldwide or just here in America?
That is worldwide.
Wow, that's quite a number. You know, we're hearing now that there are all kinds of, that this really starts at a much earlier age, long before doctors or family or the person themselves notices or that it's diagnosed. How do we deal with that? And is that true? How early does it start?
Well, it is very true. And in some ways, it is the good news that's coming out of research. We now know the disease process begins decades before those memory symptoms show up. We also know that some people show, now that we have the technology to, if you will, peek into the brain, we can see the beta amyloid plaques and the tau tangles, which are the two indicators of potential Alzheimer's forming in the brain long before there are symptoms. We also know, as I was going to say, that a lot of people show the plaques and tangles at an Alzheimer's level, if you will, in their brain, but they never get the symptoms. So, you know, we have that to address. How is it that some people have way too many beta amyloid plaques, way too many tau tangles, but yet they don't progress to the symptoms, whereas other people do? So the good research news is, and in fact, out of the conference in Philadelphia around Thanksgiving, the researchers summed it up. The good news is that we know this disease begins way before the symptoms, likely in someone's 40s, so that we can target what we can do in terms of lifestyle, what we can do in terms of diet, exercise, etc., what we can do in terms of drug interventions to prevent pathological components of the disease from becoming those symptoms that impact very negatively our everyday life.
Well, this is all good news because, as you know, I went through this with my parents now. Goodness, I guess it's 15 years ago, and there's a lot has changed. It certainly changed for me with my conversations with you, but also I had to sort of learn on my own because no one really was there to tell me what it was until, well, let me tell the story so that people understand what I'm talking about. First of all, we had no knowledge of this in our family. I was living in New York City, and I only got a call at some point from an aunt who said that my father had missed a car payment, and somehow the bank had called her, and Dad just was not the type to ever miss a payment of any kind. So I was had a little time, and I came to visit, and they seemed to be physically having a little trouble, and they were able to talk to me about it. But there was something different. I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And then I checked the checkbook, and that was when I saw that Well, the checks that were made out weren't even made out correctly, and they weren't mailed. So that would be, exactly. So that's when that was my first eye-opening experience. And then still, I didn't quite know what I was dealing with, but I did take them to the doctor, and the doctor started to explain things. And it was a process that, for good as well as sad reasons, it lasted for years. Because I was in a position to be able to take care of them in their own home, et cetera, and have 24/7 care, the doctor said I gave them 12 years of life that they might not have had, because people die from Alzheimer's. Explain that to me. I do get it intellectually, but how does this thing that affects the memory kill people?
It's a very good question, and really we have to think of Alzheimer's and all dementia as a disease of the brain that progresses. Mm. Alzheimer's disease progresses. So it starts in the memory and executive function, judgment area of the brain, the hippocampus, but that disease travels in the brain. Mm. And eventually gets to motor skills and those other things that our body does for us without us knowing, like swallowing,
yes,
and breathing. So we now know that people don't die because of their memory problems.
Okay.
But in fact, Alzheimer's disease is causing their death because they can no longer take nutrition.
Yes.
And that's oftentimes, or they can no longer deal with pneumonia and, you know, breathing problems,
yes,
arise.
Yes.
So as the disease progresses through the brain, it starts moving into the motor skills of the brain, kind of the opposite,
yes,
of Parkinson's. Parkinson's starts in the brain with the motor skills, but then oftentimes travels into the hippocampus and begins to erode the cognitive skills as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, I appreciate that, because you do know, first of all, you know the subject so well, but you are also able, there are teachers who know information but cannot teach it in a way that the student needs to hear it, but you have always been able to do that, Sue. I so appreciate that. I'm wondering, we've hit the people with quite a lot. I mean, you and I live with it a little more, but for those,
yeah,
who are still trying to understand, or worse, run away from it and ignore it, tell us remind us, first of all, of your involvement with NIH and what new research. You mentioned the Thanksgiving latest. Let's expound on, give people some hope that there is a light at the end of the tunnel as far as scientific research and how we have to financially support that.
Well, you are exactly correct, and I'll tell you, the lights at the end of the tunnel are really multiple, but two in particular. We have a national Alzheimer's plan.
Mm-hmm.
It was passed unanimously by Congress, House and Senate,
wow,
in 2011, and signed into law January 4th, 2012, by President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
That plan says we will have effective treatments.
Yes.
We will have a way to cure/reverse, and we will have a prevention for Alzheimer's by 2025.
Wow.
Now, granted,
yes,
that's 10 years away, but there is a national commitment. I mean, we were able to put, if you will, a man,
yes,
a human, on the moon. We were able to do a number of things, including change the death sentence of AIDS, HIV.
Yes.
So now one can live with that disease and live a pretty full life.
Yes.
So we can do this. The other bright light we have is we have a Virginia dementia state.
Yes.
So there is a commitment here in the Commonwealth as well, that not only are we doing our part, we have research funds here in Virginia. Uh-huh. Nearly $250,000,
yes,
is being provided to researchers across Virginia each year. But we also have a commitment in Virginia in particular, providing the kinds of programs and services that individuals need and communities need to more effectively deal with the impact of Alzheimer's and dementia on families and on communities.
Hmm. This is encouraging because within the process of repeated hospital or doctor visits, more likely, with my parents, I once asked the doctor very early in the stage when I was discovering what was going on. I asked a doctor, was it hereditary? And his response was rather flippant. He says, oh, no, it's got nothing to do with heredity. And, you know, I just didn't believe him. He just seemed so flippant about it. And I went, I've got two parents. I'm watching what they're going through. And at this point, they were still able pretty much to communicate with me, you know, with some limitations. But that was early on. And this went on, as I mentioned earlier, for 12 years. So is it or is it not hereditary?
Well, your doctor, as flippant as may have been, and a few years ago, was actually correct. Only 2-3% of all Alzheimer's is inherited.
Mm-hmm.
And those has to do with the APOE4 gene, and that's, again, only 2-3% of all the people in the world have that particular anomaly that causes it to be inherited. Now, it is genetic, though. We now have more than 24 genes that we know play some role in inferring risk or protection around Alzheimer's disease. So we do believe that there could well be, if you will, some genetic misfire that happens in the brain. For what reason, we're not sure. Is it the plaques and tangles? Is it inflammation in the system? Mm-hmm. Is it diabetes? Some fascinating new studies came out last month on, and I had heard this about a year ago as well, that sleep or the lack thereof may have huge consequences for risk of Alzheimer's, in particular that when the body sleeps and therefore the brain sleeps, the lymphatic system is, if you will, the cleansing system of the brain, and it can do its work when you have the proper deep sleep for the proper number of hours. And it's also during that sleep that one generally dreams. And the dream analogy is a fascinating one to me. Two of the drugs we now have on the market that are now 12 years old, what they do is boost the acetylcholine in the brain, which induces more dreaming. So there's beginning to be more and more interconnection between the importance of sleep and the certain levels and lengths of sleep to keeping the brain healthy so that the brain can, if you will, ward off Alzheimer's itself. So there are many moving parts now to what's happening around Alzheimer's disease and the research, which is very, very exciting, because with all of these different research avenues and the communication amongst researchers, there has been a commitment fostered by the Alzheimer's Association across all sectors, whether you're a chemist, a biologist, or a neurologist, or a social worker. If you're doing Alzheimer's research, those results are shared with every other researcher.
Excellent. Well, I think it's fair to say that the medical profession, at least, and as you say, with the congressional vote in 2011, that the public is becoming aware that Alzheimer's is not something that can be ignored away. And we are making strides now in prevention. Like, for instance, what is the big event at NIH in February 2015? I think it's the 9th and the 10th. What is that? Are they?
Well, the NIH, through the National Alzheimer's Plan, this happened in 2012, and it is time to do it again.
Uh-huh.
They bring together the premier researchers across the country.
Wow.
And ask them to help guide not only the amount of research funding, but also the types of research that needs to be done. And so there's more and more connection, too, between NIH and the various private funders around the country, whether they be schools of medicine or funded through very philanthropic initiatives, such as, you know, Paul Allen, one of the co-founders of Microsoft, is very involved in Alzheimer's research.
Yes.
Google co-founders are very involved. The Mayo Clinic is very involved. So there is an alignment, if you will, and a cooperation and a collaboration across the public and the private. And the NIH, of course, can be a huge convener and driver of these types of cooperations and collaborations.
Excellent. We're going to take a break right now, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back, and we're going to talk about some preventive measures. We've already talked about sleep, but there's diet, food, exercise. There are things you can do already to slow down the process. It is not inevitable. Stay with us. We will be right back.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Spellbound is a 2002 documentary film about eight young teens, elite contestants in their competition of choice, the 1999 Scripps National Spelling Bee. These devoted and goal-oriented children take enormous pride in their spelling skills. In their daily lives, they may be shunned as the class nerds, but here, they are the masters of their fate, the captains of their souls. Is it any wonder that they thrive on the achievement and the recognition? So do we. Spell cabotinage. It's not even in most dictionaries. We cringe as our new friends ever so painfully search memory banks for clues. So physically hard does one contestant concentrate that it seems letters are wrung from his brain as water from a sponge. Spell apocope. We are with them for the pain of the bell the moment a wrong letter is uttered. No take-backs here, vanquished from the field of battle. And we share the joy and relief when no bell rings. Life goes on for another round. In Spellbound, we have a great documentary letting us get to know this special breed of children as they struggle to become the number one speller in the land. And now for the win. Spell Logoria. Indie Film Minute. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is Sue Friedman, who is the president and CEO of the Alzheimer's Association in Central and Western Virginia. We've been talking a lot about the challenges and the expectation of Alzheimer's tripling in number of people who have the illness. But we want to talk some now about preventive measures, about diet, about what other things can trigger Alzheimer's. And also we want to talk about what I know I discovered, and Sue knows a lot about. I discovered with my parents how the arts and music in particular, and even old jokes that they remember, because people with Alzheimer's tend to remember far away, if you will, memories rather than more recent memories. Is that correct, Sue?
Oh, most definitely. And that's because the disease begins at short-term memory. The disease begins impacting what you know today. So I need to get Kleenex, and you walk into the room and you walk back out and you have no Kleenex. So, you know, the short-term memory is impacted first. The things that we know about, we can't say prevent, unfortunately, but at the Alzheimer's Association, we know many things about what may help reduce risk to delay Alzheimer's. And you've alluded to this. Everything that is heart healthy is brain healthy.
Yes.
So as we say, watch your numbers, watch your blood pressure, watch your blood sugar, absolutely at all costs,
yes.
Nearly. Avoid diabetes.
Uh-huh.
Watch your cholesterol numbers, watch your weight. And so all those things that are heart healthy are brain healthy. In particular, though, we draw out three or four things. Number one, we know via research the one thing that has been proven to delay Alzheimer's is exercise.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so exercising at least three times a week, 40 minutes each time will help the brain remain as healthy as it can be to kind of delay out the Alzheimer's symptoms for as long as possible.
Of course.
There's growing research around the value of the Mediterranean diet, which ties very nicely to heart healthy.
Yes.
But in particular, the omega-3s, legumes or beans, and being very good about the Mediterranean diet, which does include dark chocolate and red wine.
Yes.
So we need not be totally depriving ourselves of some of the good things in life. And then, of course, social interaction. Amazingly,
yes.
The act of what we're doing now,
yes.
Of what our listeners are doing in terms of engaging their brain,
yes.
In conversation or in thinking of conversation, is a good way to keep the brain healthy. And so also social interaction is a way to avoid the negative impacts of isolation. I speak about my mother from time to time, who's 85 now, and who does live alone.
Yes.
And that does concern me, because literally days may go by where she is not in the company of another human being.
Yes.
Now, phone calls are great, Skype is great, FaceTime is great, but making conscientious efforts to have those human interactions, whether they be via technology or in person, can be very, very important for your brain.
Yes, and I want to say it's not just engaging the brain in activities like crossword puzzles, but it's engaging the brain in learning new things, which can be pretty simple, like taking a walk in the neighborhood and so forth. Talk to us about that. How do we?
Well, yes. One of the things, in terms of to continue with what might help prevent learning new things, and what I like to do, and this makes it easy for me to understand, it's like switching gears.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone says to me, which they do frequently, I'm great at crossword puzzles, I've done them for 40 years, my response would be, try Sudoku.
Uh-huh.
Try a word fight game.
Yes.
Try some other, because your brain has gotten so that that's routine.
Yes.
Your brain knows that process well, and it's not stretching your brain to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, you have to find new words, maybe, or think up new responses to the clues, but still, that process is well known to your brain.
Yes.
So learn to swim. Learn a language, learn to do a different dance, take a class. Someone said to me, what if I did everything left-handed for the day? Sure,
oh.
If you're right-handed,
yes.
Do everything left-handed. Take a different route home from the grocery store or
yes.
From church.
Yes.
Do things that will stretch your brain, and that comes full circle to something that it really intrigues you, I can tell this,
yes.
Is change up your walking path, and if you're walking or in your neighborhood, choose a path that's more challenging. There was some particular research we've discussed that when you walked in an area that had crosswalks,
yes.
And signals and turns,
yes.
And potentially some commercial areas where people might be backing out or pulling in, your brain had to monitor,
yes.
And pay attention to many more things. That's very healthy for the brain.
Yes. So a walk through the neighborhood or a different neighborhood is really stimulating mentally and something we really should, you can enjoy. It's, as you say, it's heart healthy too, but your brain is constantly working unless it falls into a routine.
Exactly.
And that's what we want to avoid.
Well, and walking and talking with someone, you've got
yes.
The double.
Yes.
You've got that conversation and the brain. So now the brain has to pay attention to a conversation and make sure you don't fall off the curb.
The last time you told me this, I mentioned I have a routine at the pool that I do. And all my doctors that I've talked to have said, it was just great because I run in the pool as opposed to swimming. And it does all this, it's great. And I have this whole process. And I told told you. But then when you told me about the doing new things, I thought, well, gee, I'm only going back and forth in the lane. So now what I do, after a few times running or walking in the pool, I get out of the pool, walk around the pool, and I make myself look at all the different things. And you'd be amazed at what's there, you know, signs, looking out the window, there's a car, there's a tree moving a certain way, a car parked or one driving by, all these things. And every time we do that, the brain is analyzing what it's seeing and deciding what it is, what it means. And all of that is what keeps it healthy, that constant working to understand, perceive, and analyze. Is that good?
It is absolutely good. You know, one of the things we know, which is both positive and negative, so we're always careful how we share this.
Uh-huh.
But the more one is knowledgeable / educated, the more one is protected.
Yes.
Against Alzheimer's disease. And what Dr. Carol Manning, who runs the UVA Memory and Aging Clinic, says, and she says it very well, it's your cognitive reserve.
Yes.
So your brain may have 12 ways to get to fact A,
mm-hmm.
because you've been stimulating it, you've been running in the pool and walking around, and you know, you've been doing all of these things to stretch
yes.
your brain. Whereas someone like my mother, who's home alone and is not learning new things, may only have 5 ways to get to fact A. So if the disease begins to impact the brain, her symptoms are going to show up sooner.
Uh-huh.
Because she has less of a reserve. She has less of a cushion, if you will, in terms of her memory pathways. So when the 5 memory pathways she has are taken, are stolen by this disease, she then loses that cognitive capacity. Whereas you, with your 12 memory pathways, still have 7 more ways to get there.
And I want you to know, not only do I walk around in one direction, but when I do it another time, I walk in the opposite direction. And you know what? You see different things.
Oh, yeah. You're doing something that very few of us do, but it is quite startling and intriguing. The brain is an amazing organ. And if we really pay attention to what the brain is doing and seeing and aware of, we are startled by
yes.
all that's going on with our brains.
Yes, yes. Wow. I understand there's a prevention. I know you don't like us to use that word, and I don't mean to suggest we can prevent Alzheimer's. We, at best at this point, can only delay it. But I understand there's a prevention trial underway. And who is it that's looking for people between 65 and 85 with normal memory and thinking skills? Is it sort of a test to see how their brains are looking and functioning so we can compare them with Alzheimer's patients, or is that an over?
Well, I think this involves one of our drug interventions that did not fare well in a trial 2 years ago. The drug was targeted to people who already had Alzheimer's.
Yes.
There was a small subgroup in that study that showed remarkable decrease in the pathology of Alzheimer's. In other words, the beta amyloid plaques and tau tangles, even though they didn't have any symptoms yet. So this prevention trial is looking at, if you will, healthy people who
yes.
have no symptoms, and to see if indeed this drug that showed a pretty bright glimmer of hope for pre-symptomatic people, if indeed it will allow us to avoid moving into the symptom stage, if we can address the kind of the pathological problems before they turn into symptoms. So it's a very, very exciting trial. It's one of the 4 major trials we have going on. And it is our hope that in July, at the Alzheimer's Association International Conference on Research, right up the road in Washington, D.C., that we can have some very positive preliminary results from this particular trial. Because, again, going back to the Philadelphia conference and what we've learned over the last 3 or 4 years, we need to address this disease before someone has a symptom.
Exactly.
So if indeed the prevention trial can show prevention possibility, then we are in excellent shape to really make a huge impact on stopping Alzheimer's disease.
You know, it is such, it's so exciting to even think about. The general public and others are beginning to really recognize this is something we need to deal with, as you say, with the same kind of national commitment as going to the moon or addressing other diseases, cancer, HIV, AIDS. We have to pull together and say, okay, this is a fact. Now, what do we do about it? Because Americans can get pretty entrepreneurial and creative when we pull together on something. I guess before we run out of time, let's make certain we need, obviously, an association like Alzheimer's needs financial support for the research and other studies. But where do people go to perhaps offer financial support, but also find other information so they can follow through on what you've been telling us today?
Well, our website is ALZ.org. Then you put in a / and CWBA for Central and Western Virginia. Or if you go to ALZ.org, you can put in your zip code, or you can click on the state of Virginia and also find us. And of course, at both of those locations on the left-hand side, you'll see a button that says donate.
Of course.
You can always do that. But you're right. We are 100% non-government funded 501c3 charity. Mm-hmm. And so the work that we do, supporting research, supporting brain health through education, and of course, programs and services for those dealing with Alzheimer's today, both someone who has Alzheimer's as well as the many, many, many caregivers. And you've been in that caregiver seat, and you know how important it is. We had a support group in the office just this past week, and they do not ever want to cancel that meeting. They need that.
Yes. I can understand that, because when I, I had no prior education about how to deal with Alzheimer's, our patients, or even with my parents now being my children. So I had to learn as I went along, and I don't recommend that anyone who can come to. As a matter of fact, you have a 800 number people can call and actually get.
Oh,
yes, tell us
thank
that.
Thank you so much. We like to say we're open 24/7,
yes.
365 days a year. If you call 800-272-3900, people can finish listening to the program and pick up the phone. You will get one of my good colleagues. You'll get a professional to address your immediate questions and needs,
yes,
but also to make sure that you are connected into other resources and information for the future.
Excellent. I just wanted us to mention that, because where I was going with this is that you don't want to learn on the job. You want to know. I had, just to quickly give some instances, there are things, first of all, you have to recognize there's a difference and not deny it. And then you have to get professional help, medical and otherwise, to help you deal with it, because there are many books and you do need to read, but there's nothing quite as good as being able to, like the group that you have that can come in and ask questions. Of course, on the website, there are the FAQs, as with any website, and those help as well. I can remember things like discovering I had to put a lock at the top of the front door because my father would like to go to the door and open it. And we learned early before there was a problem, but he would leave. He'd walk out the house. But the biggest thing I wanted to say is that initially I thought I was going to come back from my New York career and just like the director I was, solve this in 30 days and go back to New York. And it doesn't work that way. Fortunately, I realized very quickly this was not something I could do alone or even with my brother's help, and he was extremely helpful. But you need to have people come in, preferably licensed people who can come in. And ultimately, of course, they came and went, and then we went through a period where they would come in and fix meals and go, and then finally live-ins 24/7 and nurses that came twice a week, and not everyone can do that, but I'm just saying, don't try to go it alone, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, and that's exactly one of our taglines is, you're not alone.
Yes.
And not only are you not alone, you ought not to be alone.
Exactly.
Because a very sad statistic, 1 in 3 caregivers dies before the person with Alzheimer's. Because it begins to impact their health.
Yes, yes. And every time you say that to me, I don't know how I made it, but I'm glad I did. And I appreciate, I say this not so much as a brag from my point of view, but doctors who've said this to me, and the nurse, the last call I got, you mentioned cholesterol earlier, that a nurse called at one point and said that this was after years after Dad had gone, but Mom was still alive, and she said, I think we need to take your mother off of certain medications. And I remember saying to her, there was this pause, and then I said, you're telling me she's not going to die from cholesterol. And the nurse, who was wonderful, said, that's right, Marcello. And so, these kinds of decisions, you have to have somebody there of a professional, knowledgeable level who can help you through that. Sue, I can't thank you enough. It's not just being on the show, but every time we have a conversation, I learn more. Hey, my brain, you're making my brain do new things.
Well, we are putting into play exactly what we recommend.
Yes, exactly. Any last words of advice? Maybe want to repeat the website and the telephone number. What do you tell us as they end this radio show, what do they do?
Well, absolutely. Be aware of what the 10 warning signs are. They're at ALD.org. Be mindful of yourself and those around you, especially those you love. And if you are concerned, if you do believe you're seeing some of the warning signs, document them, write them down, and please bring them to your healthcare professional's attention. A very sad statistic we learned about Virginians last year through a state survey, only 25% of those people who are concerned about their cognitive health, about their memory, mention it to their doctor. Yes. One of the things in closing, it's very important to rule out. It could be a hearing problem.
Yes.
It could be a touch of depression. It could be a vitamin deficiency.
Yes.
It could be a negative interaction between an over-the-counter supplement and a prescription drug. So please, we want people to know that you're not necessarily saying, I have Alzheimer's, but you are saying, I have a concern. We have a problem.
Yes.
Let's investigate.
Yes. All right. Thank you. We're going to have to end it there, Sue. Thank you so much, Sue Friedman, President and CEO of the Alzheimer's Association in Central and Western Virginia. As always, it is a pleasure to learn, and it is brain stimulating also. Thank you so much, Sue, and best to all you do. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute.
Before Jon Favreau moved to Hollywood to write, produce, direct, and act in some of the biggest blockbusters of our times, he had deep roots in indie film, beginning with the indie classic Swingers. chef, Marc Favreau's return to the indie world, now armed with all the lessons and contacts he picked up in the big leagues. Let's face it, big actors bring a lot to the table, so why wouldn't Favreau bring friends like Sofia Vergara, Dustin Hoffman, Bobby Cannavale, Oliver Platt, and Robert Downey Jr. into his new indie venture? And after all, Hollywood has mastered the art of good storytelling, even if the stories can sometimes be as hollow as an empty suit. But there is nothing hollow here. Carl Casper is a top chef, passionate about food, but prone to neglecting the rest of his life. When a career blow-up bounces him to the bottom, he seeks redemption in the window of a traveling food truck, serving up delicious Cuban sandwiches with his young son and loyal line cook. In Chef, Favreau gets back to the basics, combining the best of his Hollywood experience with his innate indie roots. The result is our favorite laugh-out-loud comedy of the year, a perfectly polished indie with Hollywood DNA. Chef, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us in becoming one of the reasonable voices heard around the world. Choosing to harvest dignity in life, death, and electoral politics. How conditioned and sold we are by food, beverage, and political TV ads. Every time I vote, I remember the last time my parents were mentally capable of it. Crowded polling places, working voting machines, faces of voters stuck as the fruits of the last political ad they saw, and those motivated to vote against, not for, ballot issues or candidates, all present and accounted for. So what's next? Midterm red wave turns pink, then purple, then 2016 blue. Two-thirds of Americans choose to not vote. MIAs under 40, inheriting the earth, choose by proxy to allow environment raped by Mitch McConnell coal, Boehner's style of immigration, corporatism's denial of climate change science despite supreme superstorms, Takata airbag murder, and the religious right resurrecting same-sex marriage bans. When the day comes we brand each other, I am human too. We'll recognize the truth about media-hyped red versus blue Wall Street excrement and spread it like manure to grow mutual respect. And with the kindness of strangers, save ourselves from TV ads selling food that kills and mind-numbing political shell games stealing collective discernment and individual dignity. In the race against Alzheimer's, I drive my parents to breakfast on weekends, stimulating their memories by playing CDs of old radio comedians. No talk radio twiddle-dee, twiddle-dumb, brainwashed midterm voters, but a journey laughingly transported by car talk. Long before Alzheimer's silenced the incredible humor of Tom Magliozzi, he and younger Ray returned my parents to me, though temporarily, from this disease through time-traveling laughter. For 12 years after diagnosis, Dad's knee-slapping belly laughs and Mom's laughing so hard she cried were detailing by Click and Clack the Tappet Brothers. After our last breakfast out, Mom's touch prevented my turning off the ignition, struggling with funny men on that thing you in-house, the word long lost to her, but it was clear what she wanted was the funny car men played on her television. So thank you, Magliozzi brothers, for all the laughs that connected family meals, life, death, and sometimes even politics with dignity. All too often too close to call without walking in the shoes of the unknown unseen who serve without a voice. Initially, life and dignity are planted together, but separated somewhere on the journey between harvester and supermarket corporate headquarters to our kitchen, home, or fast food dining room tummies. The presumptive American way is being provided a happy meal whenever.
but a penny for your thoughts for those who deliver our food. Beyond Pizza, Chinese, or even growers and their distributors. It's not the multi-million dollar supermarket corporations like Publix, Kroger, and Safeway consumed by profiteering off cheap labor. It's migrant farm workers in the field who deliver us this day our daily bread. There are 200 million migrants working outside of the country in which they were born in order to feed their children and ours, for which they are at best rented guest workers, or arguably the new slaves, not owned, but leased for a penny per pound of hand-picked product. Almost no one chooses the indignity of inequitable gender wages, or Alzheimer's, or brain cancer, like Republican women choose to be anti-ERA ratification, or the under 40 voter choosing not to choose. My mother and father, Ted Kennedy and Tom Magliozzi, chose the last laughs. Brittany Maynard, the last roll call, and Lauren Hill, the first college hoops. Would you choose to pick food for strangers for a piece rate per bucket? Migrant workers in America, the real deliverers feeding the best-fed nation in the world, are paid about 50 cents per 37-pound bucket. The coalition of Immokalee workers chose Publix hunger strike while still harvesting our last meal. And you don't have to be brainwashed to see the injustice in that. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of The Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world.